Today on Rambling About Cars, the most powerful Mercedes AMG ever, the weirdest looking Toyota pickup ever, Subaru makes the biggest mistake ever. Well, maybe not ever, but maybe sort of twice. And it's Labor Day weekend, so we got to talk about some trucks and some campers. Weekend warriors, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce. How you been?
I've been good. So just real quick reminder, this comes from the higher ups. Hey, if you've watched the show before, hit the subscribe button for us. If you haven't watched the show before, watch it, see if you like it. And if you do like it, you know, subscribe for us.
You will like it. We know you're going to like it.
I'm not making promises, man. I'm not going to put that promise out there. But I'm just saying.
That's true. Let's not set the bar too low, I guess.
But, you know, if you can, if you like us, it would help us if you would subscribe. So
we're rambling about cars. Yeah. Like, subscribe, follow, you know, the spiel.
Exactly.
We got a few things to talk about. We're heading up to a holiday weekend in the United States. So
we are.
The news tends to get a little bit slower, but this time
double whammy for us, because not only is it a holiday weekend in the United States, but also the Munich Motor Show, which we used to call the Frankfurt Motor Show, but has moved this year
to Munich.
Yeah, to Munich, obviously. That now starts on Monday. So it's kind of been a slowish news week simply because major automakers in Europe are holding off their big, big news for next week. So next week, you can expect some big stuff. Week after that, we're going to have some guests who will actually have been in Munich coming on the show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so news this week is kind of, it's some interesting stuff. It's maybe not groundbreaking stuff, but it's
There is one thing that just came out that we're going to talk about here that will be at Munich that is pretty big, not necessarily size-wise, but power-wise. And that is the new Mercedes AMG GT63 S Performance.
Performance.
I had to take a breath there. This just came out. It was a day or two ago, as of recording here.
It was basically this morning or late last night, one or the other. But
I mean, it's the familiar looking AMG GT63,
except for it just has
a little more power. You want to tell us how much power, Bruce?
So I'll give the specs. So we've got twin turbo 4-liter V8, which has been an AMG staple now for years.
Yep.
However, this one also is a plug-in hybrid. Mm. It's got a 6.1 kilowatt hour battery, which is actually even small-ish by plug-in hybrid standards. You could borderline get away with that without the plug-in, kind of sort of. It's kind of that tweener. But the power, I'm sorry, the power, 831 horsepower.
Combined.
Yes, combined. That's nice to hear.
The torque is what blows my mind.
1,033 pound feet of torque. Which is like, that's heavy duty trucks 15 years ago.
I just looked up some stats prior to recording because I think it's hilarious that Mercedes, their ultimate performance sedan here, has almost as much torque as a Ram 3500 one-ton truck with the big 6.7 liter Cummins diesel. For 2021, that diesel is rated at 1,075 pound-feet of torque. Last year, I think it was like just a little over 1,000. So technically, if you have a 2020 Ram 3500 big 6.7 liter Cummins, this Mercedes AMG sedan, I know they call it a coupe, but come on, it's four.
It's a sedan. We're not going to call it a coupe.
AMG GT sedan has more torque than your big one-ton Cummins Ram truck from 2020 on. And then you also have the Ford F-350 Power Stroke diesel 6.7. That's got 1,050 pound-feet of torque. So, it's right there. It's right there. This lowly little super sedan just has a ridiculous amount of torque. That gets my attention more than the horsepower, and I'm sure it's going to get everybody else's attention more than the horsepower.
So it gets 0 to 62 100 kilometers an hour in 2.9 seconds.
That seems a little slow, doesn't it? Considering that kind of power. I mean, I love to say that it's slow.
It doesn't seem slow. That's not slow. It's just
feels
not.
Like that should be like 2.5 or 2.3 or something.
Dude, it's less than 3 seconds. Let's not.
Yeah, I well, that's why I say I hate to say it. But when you start talking about 830 horsepower, 1,000 some pound feet of torque.
Tires on the road can only do so much. Like, there's only so much traction that's possible. And I think we're basically there. So I can never call a car that's doing 0 to 100 kilometers in 2.9 seconds slow. It's just, that's not slow.
It's not slow at all. I was just questioning. It feels like it should be faster. And I hate that I feel like it should be faster.
I don't know.
Because 2.9 is insane.
But what I did think is interesting. So top speed, 196 miles per hour.
Does that seem kind of slow?
Well, that's the thing.
I'm terrible. I'm in a terrible frame of mind here.
Well, no, I kind of agree with you there, actually, because a Dodge Charger Dodge Charger Red Eye wide body tops out at 203. So despite having just stupid amounts of horsepower and torque, this is still not technically faster than a Charger Hellcat or Charger Red Eye. The stupid names. Anyway, it's not faster than the top end Charger, which is also a sedan. And that's just funny to me, because if you're going 200 miles an hour down the road, you are not only going to jail immediately, like, you are spending some time there, at least in the United States. So it's all kind of a moot point. But regardless of what Mercedes did, it is still not technically the fastest four door that you can buy.
But it's certainly the most powerful anything that's ever come from Mercedes AMG. Yeah. And I have to wonder, maybe, I don't know if I missed it. Is that top speed limited by drag, or is that computer limited? You know, they decided 197 might just be a little too much, so we'll set it at 196.
So our story did not specify that. I do not know whether it is an electronic limit, whether it's a gearing limit, whether it's an aerodynamic limit. So
I would have to suspect it's an aerodynic limit. I don't think
Charger's a brick going down the road. So
yeah,
the answer is I don't know, but the answer is also, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, after 110, like, it kind of doesn't matter.
But let's talk about the other aspect of this, because this is a plug-in hybrid, so it's environmentally friendly. I'm being a little sarcastic here, Bruce. Cut me a little slack. Come on. I mean, it's got a 7.5 mile electric only range.
So you can go from here to a local gas station, fill up, and then you're fine.
Yeah, that's a little soft when it comes to plug-in hybrids. It can do 81 miles an hour on just electric power alone. Presumably not for 7.5 miles, though. You're probably going to bring the battery.
I assume that's measured in seconds.
And Mercedes, I think, even said this. This plug-in hybrid vehicle, it's built for performance. It's not built to be a green car, if you will. It's not built to just run all over the place on electric only power. This is utilizing hybrid technology in a performance aspect. And on that front, it's hard to argue with 831 horsepower, 1,033 pound feet of torque. I mean, I know there are people out there that don't like electric vehicles. And this is partially electrified, but folks, you cannot deny the power of electricity in cars. It's phenomenal. And this car, if I remember correctly, it doesn't even add that much weight. I think it was only about 200 pounds heavier, because it's such a small battery, right?
It's a small the motor, the battery, but they're smallish for what they are. So yeah, it's not that much bigger than other ones.
Yeah. And I mean, Mercedes, they don't have any pricing on this yet, but it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. When we wrote the story, we were expecting probably 160. We don't have an actual price, but 160 or more, certainly.
And I don't know.
It's a lot of money.
I mean, we've had talks like this before, Bruce, for 160 grand, looking for something like this? I mean, are you going with the new AMG GT 63 SE performance?
You're not going to get me on this. For 160 grand, I'm going to buy a very nice late 90s Porsche 911 and then pay off my house. And I'm going to be the happiest camper in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a four-door car.
It is
actually that has a lot of space, a lot of practicality.
Fine.
Let's talk about some apples to apples. I mean, this or like a Panamera. I think I would rather have the Panamera, the Sport Turismo.
I think I would take this over a Panamera, but I would take a Taycan over this.
Ooh, okay.
Would be my opinion.
Going all electric.
But I have to say, so my wife and I were driving around last weekend. I got behind a probably 2006-ish C-Class C55 AMG. And I was looking up the specs. That thing has 362 horsepower, which still seems like a lot to me.
Oh, yeah.
That still seems like a huge number.
It's still a big number.
And I feel like I would just be very happy with that in my life. Like, I don't need these insane numbers. Like, that's not what does it for me. Like,
right. But hey, it's fun to dream, right? You know,
you're right. You're right.
You know what's absent from this conversation? BMW. Is there anything from BMW that you would consider over this or the Porsche? No, not for me.
No, there's no new BMW.
I am not interested in anything that they have out there. Not the new M5. I know the M5 is a monster, but
to be fair, there's no new Audi I would consider over this.
Yeah.
Kind of Mercedes and Porsche, they have cornered that electrified German market, you know, and they've RS7. Done it really well.
I mean, RS7 is nice, but you're not. I mean, didn't we just see an RS7 for like 230,000? Yeah. It's fully loaded, but
I mean, RS6 Avant, that's kind of the ultimate fun family car. Maybe you could talk me into that. But if we're talking, it has to be electrified, I would go Mercedes or Porsche. I can't think of another one with electrification that I would pick.
Well, I tell you what, how about we jump over to something that you might pick? Are you familiar with what happened this week with Subaru? Because I know you.
I am. It was funny.
I know you have a Subaru. You're a Subaru guy.
And it was funny what happened this week. And it has apparently since been pulled down. And oddly, I haven't seen our competitors report on this. I don't know if we just got lucky. I don't know if Subaru sent out the hit squad or what happened. But so Subaru of Canada, their website for the Forester Wilderness Edition came out and had all the specs and all of the images.
Well, like, not all of the images. I was only able to find, you know, like three good exterior images.
Well,
and then
smaller interior images. Six total images in our story.
Right.
So, you know, they just took a little internet kung fu to find.
I mean, we should be clear. I mean, this is clearly a case of, okay, somebody made a mistake over at Subaru Canada. It was a little tricky to find that website live, but it was there. On Subaru Canada's website with the information. So of course, I mean, we grabbed the info, we grabbed some photos. Their photo gallery was only like 20% functional. Mm-hmm. There were like 9 or 10 other photos that weren't showing up.
Work. Right.
And we did try, I'll just say we tried to track down some of the other photos, but yeah, the 2022 Subaru Forester Wilderness before you're supposed to see it right here. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it, Bruce? I mean, it wasn't really a secret that the next Wilderness model was going to be right. Forester.
There's a teaser campaign still ongoing. And like you just mentioned, this is a vehicle that is not technically debuted yet. Mm-hmm. It just kind of leaked out. And so as you can see from the pictures and stuff, you get 17-inch black painted wheels. You get this extra body cladding. You get a different grill. You get kind of a black. I'm not sure if it's I assume it's a decal. I don't think it's painted on the hood. Mechanical changes are slight. They're sort of like what you're seeing in the Outback Wilderness, where lower gear ratio for the transmission. Unfortunately, you cannot get the Forester with the turbo engine, which is kind of a bummer in a way. I'm kind of surprised that Subaru did that, since you can get the Outback with the turbo engine with the Wilderness package, but you can't with the Forester. I guess maybe it lets them, since we don't have pricing yet, I don't know this for certain, but I guess it probably lets them sell the Forester Wilderness for less than the Outback Wilderness. Maybe, I would hope, but yeah, it, you know, lifted suspension, you got different seats, you know, it's a very nice vehicle. Basically, if you are a potential Subaru buyer and you intend to take your Outback or Forester out off-road kind of more than the average person, this is the one that you should get. Otherwise, maybe look around. I think a basic one or a different one would work better for you, but this is the Forester for the person that really wants to go off-road.
Well, now, can I back you up a moment? Because you said, you know, this is really nice at one point. Can we talk about those headlights, though? Can we talk about those?
I don't mind them.
The way that front looks.
I'm fine because, with it, honestly.
I mean, if you're not on YouTube, you should go to YouTube, Motor One Podcast, and follow us there so you can see everything that we're talking about. Let me try to describe the front end of this car. Imagine like the old school Cadillac CTS that had the real vertically oriented headlights, but now put a couple little, like, just little arrows jutting towards the grill from the top. It just doesn't, I mean, it's not terrible, but it just looks awkward. It looks like there are too many lines that are contrasting. There are too many shapes that are contrasting there. I'm just not feeling that look. I'm all about more off-road oriented vehicles, and I'm not talking about trucks, you know, crawling over rocks. I'm talking about, you know, SUVs, sedans, wagons that are just a little bit more fun to venture down back roads with. But I'm just not feeling the way Subaru designed that front.
I'm fine. I'm fine with it. Honestly, I understand the criticism. I've heard that criticism from other people who have seen it, but I don't mind it. I don't think it looks that bad. I think the issue is more that, and we're actually going to talk about this with a story later, I just wonder what Subaru's doing right now. It feels like they're in a coasting mode, that they're not really trying as hard as they should. And it's kind of a bummer. Like, this is fine. And I think some people will definitely find an appeal to this. I do think it's worth mentioning that there's also, you know, the Outback Wilderness, and I'm going to share an image of that now for our folks on YouTube. And I can't imagine, unless it's purely a money issue, not getting the Outback over the Forester, because you do get the turbo engine. You get also that, you know, the lower ratio for the CVT. You get, to me, the Outback is just the better option of the two.
Oh, I agree. I think it looks better all around. I think the proportions are better. And I'm not just saying that because I'm supposed to like wagons. I do like wagons.
No. It has nothing to do with that.
I like the Forester as well. I think the Outback, I think it's just better executed. I will say this. I wish Subaru offered a slightly larger size tire. On both the Outback and the Forester. I mean, just as I was looking at those Forester images again, I was thinking, holy wheel gap, Batman. That thing, and that there's another story later on that we're going to talk about.
We're about to get to that in just a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that shortly about wheel gap. On the Forester Wilderness, it just looks really awkward. I mean, it's noticeable on the Outback, but on the Forester Wilderness, it's just really kind of awkward. And I'm wondering, I mean, are there clearance issues underneath, like with the front where you're turning, maybe your contacting suspension, but it feels like those tires could be a little bit larger, not width wise, but I'm talking sidewall.
Height, yeah.
Just a taller size. And that's going to help you off road anyways. Maybe they're thinking more. I mean, they're branding this as, you know, off road friendly, not rock crawling, but
right.
You know, as we're seeing in these photos, this person is apparently just driving through a flat section of forest. But I, with those tires, I mean, yeah, those are, I mean, those are an all-terrain tire, but I, they're rather low profile. And I get the impression that they're still thinking about on-road performance first and foremost, even in these wilderness models.
But I think the thing is that Subaru has to think about that, because with the CVT, they are never going to have the performance of a vehicle with a traditional geared transmission with a low range transfer case. Like, you're, that's one of the compromises that they made. That's, you know, CVTs are great on road. They're compromised off road, I think would be fair to say.
And yeah, so, that's fair.
You know, you're never going to be able to, you know, drop it into low range and go and stuff like that. So,
but even still, a vehicle like this, if you have a higher profile tire, if you run into something like, like just sand or just some, you know, some stickier ground, you're going to get stuck with that tire, whether it's an all terrain tread or not. Mm-hmm. If you have something with a taller sidewall, something that's just going to let you get through some of that deeper stuff a little bit easier, I mean, that's going to pay off. And I don't think you would see that big of a trade-off with on-road performance. I don't know. That's my take.
I agree with you. I hope, you know, as I recall, we discussed this when the Outback Wilderness debuted. I hope Subaru takes these first two models and uses them as kind of an experiment to see what they should do in the future, because I think they could go a whole lot more hardcore. They could almost go into like a Toyota TRZ type zone.
I was about to toss a Toyota comment in there. Well, you know, I guess it depends on how much Toyota is willing to let Subaru do at this point, right?
We can talk about that in a minute.
There's a little bit of foreshadowing
come up here in just a sec. Here, throw up your Toyota, and then we'll talk about Subaru again. Because, sorry, Subaru, you're getting the brunt of this episode.
Not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I'm a Subaru fan.
I own a Subaru. I've owned a Subaru for nearly a decade now. It's just that right now, I think they're in a weird space.
Well, it's funny you mentioned weird space, because this new Toyota Hilux pickup truck has some weird space. Look at those wheels. Look at the wheel gap on this thing. So this, let me explain what this is. For those on YouTube, if you're not on YouTube, picture a new Toyota Hilux. This is called the Hilux Revo GR Sport. So, okay, a Hilux is getting GR treatment. Well, not so fast.
So it's got suspension. So
it does sit an inch lower.
Yeah.
And this is done by Toyota in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And it's for that market there. And yeah, they've lowered the truck, but it's running on 17-inch wheels with very tiny low profile tires. And I mean, I know they're going for like a sporty street truck look here, but those tires are just, my God. When I had a blowout on my Mazda 6 a couple weeks ago, this is what the Mazda looked like when I had the temporary spare on it.
So I think they're, two issues here. I think first off, the wheel offset is bad, because the offset is making the tires kind of suck into the fenders. And so there's nothing kind of sticking out. There's no musculature, for lack of a better word.
I'm glad you said that, because the tires offset.
Go ahead. What'd you say?
No, the offset is very, I mean, it's very bad in terms of looks. The engineers know what they need the offset to be, because I mean, you have to have the offset correct to make sure there isn't undue wear on the suspension components, mm-hmm. wheel bearings. I mean, that's important. But the offset on the low floor version, this is the Hilux Revo GR Sport low floor version, which is just it's a fancy way of saying this is the two-wheel drive model. Two-wheel drive.
And what's high floor?
High floor then is four-wheel drive. And they do have
Actual difference?
There is an actual difference.
Negligible.
I'll get to that in a sec. I think the high floor looks better just because it has bigger tires. But
yeah,
I mean, when you look at this image right now, I mean, the wheel gap in there is just, it's just insane. And how much better would this truck look if you just filled up that wheel gap a little bit? I mean, I don't think this is a bad looking truck.
No, it's not.
Of course, we don't get the Hilux in the United States. I mean, we have the Tacoma, right, which is similar but different. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that Toyota brought the GR treatment to a truck. And they're going for a definite street truck kind of theme here. Mm-hmm. And in the crazy world that is 2021, when trucks are just only about big off-road, how high can you jump? Any automaker saying, hey, let's create a little street truck, that gets my attention because I'm all about this. The front isn't too bad, but if the tires were just a little bit bigger, and you know, of course, GR Sport, they do lower the suspension, but the engine in this is the same. I don't have the engine stats, but if I remember correctly, it's a diesel that you can get with an automatic transmission. So I mean, on that front, I mean, it's not really that aggressive. They do dress up the truck with body colored trim, with some black trim. But I mean, the big thing on this is, yeah, it has the lowered suspension. Now, I did mention the high floor. Here's a picture of the Toyota Hilux Revo GR Sport.
And it's much better. I don't know if it's like drives much better, but just the difference in the wheel and tire package makes all the difference.
Right. The wheel and tire package is a little bit bigger on this truck. It sits at normal height. So this is just an inch higher than the low floor two wheel drive version. I mean, everything else is pretty much the same. They give it some different graphics. They give it running boards on the side. They give it one of those cool kind of, I think of it as like a 90s style, just kind of style bar mm-hmm. at the back behind the bed. I'm trying to look. Toyota didn't have any good pictures of that style bar. But I mean, it's got the built inside running boards, the wheels just look so much better on this. It fills out the gap and they're so much better. I would wonder what would the low floor look like with these wheels and tires? I mean, just change these wheels and tires because these aren't aggressive off-road tires. I mean, this is technically the four wheel drive truck, but, I mean, what are those that look like? Bridgestone Duelers, I think, which it's just going to be a fairly tame light truck tire. It's not an off-road themed truck at all.
So I have an answer for you about what it would look like. Here's an image of a Tacoma X-Runner. Basically the same idea, but with a better wheel and tire package.
I can't believe you got that because I have an X-Runner image ready to go. I was going to pull that up next saying,
okay, go for it.
It's pretty much the same image. You already beat me to it.
Okay.
Here, I'll pull up my image. It's, yeah. It's the same
shot.
it's the same. We're not that in sync. It's the same color. Where is it? There we go.
Yeah.
Much
better.
But the wheel, there's still wheel gap though. How come I never noticed that before?
But some
the X runner is ruined for me now.
No,
I can't unsee. No, it's not. It's not.
No.
There's some gap there, but it's a truck. It's going to have a little bit of gap. It's not nearly as bad. I don't
like that truck just as a truck, but it looks so much better than what GR Sport is doing now.
Oh, I mean, I wish we could get a new Tacoma GR Sport. Let it pick up where the X-Runner left off, because I loved this truck. They didn't really do anything to the engine. It wasn't a speed demon by any means.
They did basically nothing to the engine.
But it was... It was a little lower. It was just a little meaner, and you could get it with a 6-speed manual transmission, mm-hmm. which, and that truck, I mean, you wouldn't need a lot of power to just have a lot of fun with it. So, I mean, that was kind of an interesting Toyota story that caught our eye because, like I said, automakers right now, when it comes to trucks, they're just thinking bigger, better, how wild off-road can we get? And here comes Toyota. Hey, we'll do a GR Sport of the Hilux. But then they kind of botched it on their two-wheel drive. The four-wheel drive looks fine. But speaking of botched.
Yeah. Toyota, Subaru, you're on
notice. Do you want to jump back to Subaru,
folks? And Toyota, kind of, in a way.
Oh, yeah, actually, you're not wrong there. So, folks, buckle up. We're gonna let Bruce have an open mic here for a little while.
Well, here, let me get the
right. Because something else came out this week. Something else came out this week that
Subaru yesterday, as of this recording, they gave us the first good teaser image as of their Solterra, which is what the first Subaru electric vehicle is going to be.
Finally, an electric Subaru. But wait.
Sure. But so among those images, and I can show you. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it here. This comes from courtesy of our buddy Dom from Inside EVs. He did some kind of Photoshop magic and got this image of it. The actual image that it comes from is right here. And so you can see it's upside down. It's reversed. But, you know, Dom's a good guy and he knows what to do. So he got the good image for us.
Yep.
And we started looking at it and we looked at it for a moment and I wrote the story and looked at it a little bit more. And I'm going to zoom in here. It is identical to the Toyota BZ4X, which we know is on the way. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean identical in like some sort of hyperbolic way. So the differences are the Subaru has matte black fender flares rather than the Toyota has gloss black. The Toyota has a gloss black roof, whereas the Subaru has a body color. And other than that, folks, if you're watching this on YouTube, they're the same vehicle. They're exactly the same.
Say hello to the new Toyobaru.
And I don't know what Subaru is doing because I don't know how they ever expect to sell any of these when it looks exactly the same as the Toyota. Oh, wait, you're thinking, oh, I bet they changed the interior. Well, Subaru released an image of the interior.
Survey says
it is a bit dark, but you can clearly see the infotainment system is exactly the same. There are HVAC controls right underneath on both. The same rotary controller is on the center console. The same touchscreen controller is on the center console. And both of them have this instrument cluster that's set far away from the steering wheel. It's the same vehicle. It is just badge engineering. And
Subaru. I mean, not just badge engineering, but like 80s GM badge engineering. Like,
yeah,
literally, here's a different badge. We'll just put this badge on the same car, and it's now something different.
And yeah, at least on the BRZ and the GR86, they swap out the nose, they swap out the rear. It's generally the same vehicle, but they've got a couple differences. In this case, judging by what we're seeing right now, it's just literal badge engineering. And it's kind of embarrassing for Subaru, I feel like. You know, I assume they put some sort of investment in with Toyota, but Toyota developed a vehicle. They put it all together. Subaru came in, threw their badges on it, and that's the difference. And that is just sad. Like, Subaru, you're better than this. We know you are. I know the world is going to EVs. I know that that's the future, but you can do better than just being a Toyota with different badges. It's just depressing.
Well, I mean, it makes me question, you know, what Subaru has going on with their engineering teams. I mean, electrification has been in the auto industry for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And this is the first anything we've really seen from Subaru, and it's just a Toyota. So, I mean, we know Toyota has a stake in Subaru.
Yep. About 23% these days, I believe.
I mean, are we getting close to a point where Toyota is just going to buy Subaru completely?
I mean, I've been saying this for years. I think you're setting me up for this. I think within 10 years, Subaru is owned by Toyota. Mazda is owned by Honda. That's purely my prediction. But I just think that Subaru and Mazda particularly, they're big enough to remain on their own for now, but they can't remain independent for long. And that's the world we live in. And I think there's just going to be this consolidation and they're both going to get swallowed up.
I don't know. I mean, it's Subaru has a pretty lengthy history. So does Toyota. And I haven't been watching Subaru's sales figures like a hawk, but I mean, to the best of my knowledge, they're not doing terribly by any stretch.
They're on the street. You know, 2020 they dipped a little bit, but everybody did. They're fine ish. It's just that
why aren't we seeing more from Subaru in terms of investments in new tech?
I wish I knew.
That's the question that nobody can answer except the folks at Subaru.
But think about what we've been seeing from the new WRX, that it looks practically like the one that exists now, that it just feels
which has shades of Corolla, if I'm honest.
A little bit. It just feels like that, you know, I don't know this. It just feels like from covering this industry that something is happening within Toy or within Subaru, that they're just positioning themselves to be like, hey, Toyota, we're ready. Swallow us up. We're ready to, you know, join you.
So Toyota is a coach builder for BMW. And now Subaru is taking SUVs from Toyota. I feel like this is a movie of the week. I feel like we could really write something juicy about this and get a big movie deal.
Yeah, this is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, basically.
It could be. I don't know. I'm going to give Subaru the benefit of the doubt because we're talking about a teaser at this point. There's still more.
Look at these images; they're identical. Like that's the thing that you know. And the next Subaru EV is different. Maybe whatever. It's just the fact that we are seeing like the Forester Wilderness doesn't come with a turbo. That's a minor thing. Okay, whatever. That the next WRX basically looks like the current WRX. That the Subaru's first EV, that it's essentially a rebadged Toyota. It's just these confluence of things that makes me feel like it makes me worry about the future of Subaru, not next year, but more like 8 to 10 years down the line.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting time for sure. Folks, what do you think? Email us podcast@motorone.com. Is Subaru lost? Should we be concerned about Subaru? Or maybe this is just an experiment. Will people buy electric Subarus instead of investing into their own? They'll just rebadge a Toyota, see if people bite. I don't know. Podcast@motorone.com.
I don't think they will.
I don't know. I guess I don't really have an opinion on it. Okay. I haven't been super interested in Subaru since I had my hopes and dreams crushed when I bought a very rusty 91 Legacy Turbo that I had dreams of recreating Colin McRae's epic rally car, only to find that I couldn't even take bolts out underneath because it was literally that rusty. And my hopes and dreams were dashed. Subaru, we love you, but
yeah,
we're hoping for the best.
Good times in Subarus and bad times in Subarus, but I still kind of like them. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Podcast@motorone.com. Yep. Send us your emails like you didn't do last week, but we do have some comments on YouTube.
Yep. So
that we can go over.
Just real quick, podcast@motorone.com is the email address. We've received no emails last week. We received no comments on our post at motorone.com last week. However, we did receive comments on YouTube. But guys,
and we get it. I mean, it's towards the end of summer. People are out doing stuff.
Yeah.
We got big Labor Day weekend coming up here. Hopefully you're listening to the podcast, relaxing on the lake somewhere, at a barbecue somewhere, you're with friends somewhere. Shoot us an email. Say, hey, I'm sitting here and I'm near the lake and I can see some guy in an F-150 Raptor trying to back his 22-foot boat into the boat launch. And he's reversed like 8 times now and he keeps backing into the sidewalk. You know, send us stuff like that. We want to hear some of your stories.
So just real quick, so just some of our YouTube comments from this week, because we like to share those with you, because also we like to shout out our YouTube commenters, and we kind of think you enjoy it. So from our buddy Vampire Bear, he said, thank you very much again for reading and talking about my comment. I was not calling you out, just trying to be funny. He had the Fuchs comment last week.
hey, the bring it on. I can't.
He said it took me years to say Fuchs correctly. I always said Foosh is. love you guys. And it was another great podcast. And then he actually commented a second time and said, hey, go buy that Taurus show. And spoiler alert, our boss, John Neff, did not buy the Taurus show.
Did not buy it.
I haven't. Did you look? I haven't looked. Is it still for sale?
I'm afraid to look.
I suspect it's not.
I'm still too tempted
because $3,500 is.
I think that was a crazy good price for that car. I really do, especially after. I don't know if anybody watches Getaway Driver on the Discovery Channel. There's the person that just, I guess, won that whole contest. Drives a second generation Taurus show, and he's also rather famous. We did an article on him. He built an 8 second Taurus show, second generation car with a 5-speed manual that he's still shifting manually. The guy is just insane. He's just gone way further in the Taurus show realm than anybody ever thought possible. And from what I'm seeing, he's got some pretty good notoriety being on that Discovery Channel show.
Good for him.
So I have a feeling that there's going to be some people who give a second look to some of these old Tauruses, because not all of them just have a 3-liter Vulcan V6, you know?
And I got to agree with Neff. The second gen to me is the one to get. I know you're a first gen guy. I think to me, the second gen is the pretty one. But
I mean, I like them both.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be clear. I've had far more second gens than I've had first gens. But because I've had so many at this point in my life, if I get another one, I like the first gen. I like the 89 in particular with the old interior.
Fine.
No airbags, no anti-lock brakes. That car was 3,100 pounds. Tossable, fun. I'll do it. I'll do it one of these days.
Of course you will.
One of these days I'll get up the guts to sell the Mustang and buy an actual fast car.
So our buddy Josiah said, you just talked about possibly reviving iconic Japanese cars, and now the Integra is coming back. What are your thoughts? You and I both actually commented to this on YouTube. Yep. I said, I'm tentatively excited, and this is total truth. You and I right now don't know whether it's going to be a coupe, whether it's going to be a four-door. You know, my fear right now is it's just going to be an ILX with a different name. And to me, that would be the worst possibility of all. If they properly revive the Integra, you know, if there were Integra four doors, they were never super popular. It is what it is. But if they properly revive the Integra as a kind of a very nice but affordable performance car with front wheel drive, I'm going to love it. I'm on board. But if it's just an ILX, that's a new ILX with a different name, I don't care.
And I responded something to the effect of, I just don't have much of an opinion. I was never really that into the Integra back in the day. But I know a lot of people were. So, I mean, I can understand where there's a lot of excitement about it. Honestly, I think I would rather see some sort of new legend come out. A new Acura Legend, some just amazingly elegant sedan with some good performance chops, different than what they have right now. The
RLX was still called the Legend in Japan up until its death. So there was an RLX, or there was a Legend for you.
Yeah, but the original, just the cleaner lines, Acura's, and you can say this for a lot of automakers, their styling has become so archaic with so many contrasting angles. I'm really finding myself drawn to cleaner lines. And I think Acura could make a statement there if they brought out just a really elegant looking, clean lined sedan with some guts, call it a Legend. Hey, maybe something for the electric revolution, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You heard it here. A new Acura Legend electric sedan.
So super. Let's keep this one super short because we're only going to make this guy mad. But he commented on YouTube. His name is CELGOD20. I'm not sure if that's CELGOD20, CELGOD20, whatever.
Something.
But yeah, he was talking about us saying whether or not that house in Brazil that got broken into and it had all the cool cars in there, whether or not it was abandoned. And my response was that it exists in a grayish area, that the brothers who, you know, the original owner is deceased, two brothers own it now. They own the building and what's inside. However, they left that structure looking like it was abandoned. His response was, I do not see a gray area. I own two properties in Florida that look abandoned. They are both being taken down for future condos. No one should trespass on my properties.
Right.
And then you joined the conversation.
I jumped in because I think I understand what he's getting at here.
Totally.
We're splitting hairs. We're talking about, well, you and I are talking about the definition of abandoned.
Right.
And if you just want to talk about just general common definition, abandoned has nothing to do with ownership.
Right.
So if you're listening, I want to make that, and I was trying to make that point clear in my response on YouTube, and maybe I didn't. Abandonment has nothing to do with ownership. It's, in fact, I think I even looked up the basic definition here through Webster's. Abandoned, left without needed protection, care, or support, left by the owner, left to fall into a state of disuse. Has nothing to do with ownership. It's just about letting something just kind of go away. If I take my Yugo GV that I will own someday, park it in a field for 10 years, I'm still the owner, but I've abandoned that car.
Right.
It has nothing to do with ownership. And I think this person's talking about, well, if it's abandoned, if you're considering it abandoned, then it's like a free for all. Nobody owns it. And people are going into, I think the argument was, we were saying the people went into this place in Brazil, they trespassed because it was abandoned, i.e. there were no owners. No, of course there were owners.
Right.
Trespassing and ownership. Yeah, those are connected. They shouldn't have been trespassing. You shouldn't be trespassing onto somebody's property, whether it's abandoned or not. It's owned by somebody else. It's private property. You shouldn't be yanking parts off of my 10-year-old Yugo that I left in a field because that's still my Yugo. That's still my private property. I think there's two different conversations going on here. We're just saying, hey, yeah, this place was abandoned. Doesn't mean there are no owners, but if you just left something just to kind of rot away, yeah, it's abandoned. Of course it's abandoned. Everybody knows it's abandoned.
And to put my spin on it, I, like you, grew up in a rural area, and I know for a fact I walk through woods and fields that I definitely did not own, but they were the middle of the woods in the middle of a field, and there was no one there around me. And so was I trespassing in a legal definition? Yes. Was I ever hurting anything? No. And from what we saw of this video, the kids were the same way. That from what we saw, no one harmed or destroyed anything. They were just walking through and capturing what they saw.
But we're still talking about breaking and entering. That's a bit different than walking through somebody's, you know, back 40.
But you're right. But I think from this commenter, the way he's saying that he owns this land, but he doesn't currently live on it, I kind of feel the same way about that there are definitely people I have walked across their land. I did not own it. I would, you know, I just walked across it as a kid in the night because we were a bunch of teenagers and we had nothing else to do. So we walked around. I did that. Technically it's trespassing. Technically it's illegal, but I also don't feel as though I did anything wrong.
And it kind of comes back to what we were talking about last week. If all you people just did 140 in a Taurus like I did.
Exactly.
When I was young, everything would be fine.
Exactly. Screw you kids walking through woods when you're 16, get off the lawn. 15, couldn't drive and like wanted something to do. Go 140 down a road.
It was a straight road. It was a straight highway. The guy on the motorcycle was going a lot faster than me. I just want to say.
Good.
Well, we'll just leave it at that. That was a long time ago in a completely different galaxy.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you know what? It's Labor Day weekend.
It is.
It's Labor Day weekend in America, the unofficial end of summer.
That's right.
And we hope everybody is out there just trying to rest and relax a little bit. It's certainly been just crazy, crazy year after a very, very crazy year. And as Bruce and I were talking about the crazy Mercedes AMG with enough torque to match a one-ton pickup truck, we were thinking, well, I mean, Labor Day, how many people are jumping into their trucks, towing their boats, towing their campers somewhere for one last weekend away from it all before schools or before work locks you all back in.
That's the thing about this holiday. This is kind of the last big shebang before Thanksgiving, where if you're going to go see family or something like that, like this is, you know, obviously there's Halloween and Halloween's super fun, but that's not really a traveling holiday.
That's a walking through your neighbor's woods.
Yeah.
When you're a teenager holiday, right?
Yeah. That's a fun one. I've done that.
But we thought, well, let's talk about some campers. And if it sounds like we're kind of winging it here on the last half of the podcast today, it's because we're winging it here today on the last half of this podcast. We knew we wanted to talk about maybe some cool big campers or some trucks or a combination of both, but we didn't really narrow it down. So I know we have a couple things that we would just want to bring up to everybody. Just some cool campers, some cool ideas that we've seen over the last few weeks to even maybe a year or so ago, some of the ones that I have in mind. So we just want to share that with you because we also know that camping and van life right now is huge.
Yep.
I think it might be bigger than it's ever been. Not just people deciding to go camping for a weekend, but people saying, I'm done renting this apartment. I'm done with this house. We're going to buy this full-size van and convert it into a house. And we're going to live in the van down by the river in the best possible circumstances here. Yes. But Bruce, why don't you tell us what we're looking at here? Because this thing is just awesome.
It is. Let me give my own take on that just real quick before we kind of move on. Is that so? We had the double whammy of we had COVID-19, which is obviously still going on for a lot of people. It's not over. We kind of got over the first wave. We're starting on the second wave. But for a lot of people, the kind of the camping RV industry became like a lifeline to them is what we saw. They had a huge industry last year because you didn't have to worry about social distancing. You didn't have to worry about going to a hotel that hadn't been cleaned properly. You could stay in your own little bubble, but still travel. And so that happened. And then I don't know if it's a coincidence. I don't know what it was, but we had that movie Nomadland come out that won a bunch of Oscars. And it was about a woman who was doing that. And I think it popularized everything even more. And so we're living in this time right now in 2021 where, you know, living in RV motorhome, something like that is more acceptable maybe than in the last, since the 70s, I would say, you know, but as you were saying, yes, we saw recently this Camelot cruiser come up. So this is, it is hauled by a semi truck, basically a 1970s era semi truck, and it's green on green and it's gorgeous and it's cool as hell. And it is up for auction. And so if you're watching on YouTube right now, you'll be able to see some of the pictures. So the outside is light green on dark green with a yellow pinstripe on it, which is perfectly 1970s.
It is the Brady Bunch on wheels.
It really, really is. And so, yeah, there is the shot that's a Brady Bunch on wheels. It has a like stone facade. I don't even know what you would call that. But then with a green couch, green curtains, wood paneling, shag green carpet, like it is the most 1970s thing you have ever seen. And it's super cool. And unfortunately, so actually I'm gonna have to stop this and go to our other images. It comes with something that might be even cooler. And that is that it has these vintage snowmobiles loaded into the bottom section.
I'm a snowmobiler, or at least I used to be. And I don't remember these.
No. So these are Peloron snowmobiles, which we looked up. They essentially only existed during the 1970s. but they have this cool like bug eye look. They're customized with Camelot on the front. Here in just a second, I will show you what they look like from the factory, but they are loaded underneath on this green, orange, and light green like carpeting. This thing is just, it's just the coolest. Like, you know, at the time, you know, maybe in this, there was a point in time in the 90s where certainly this looked uncool as hell. But now you look at it and it's just all of this shag carpeting and wood paneling, and it just looks so cool. I'm going to stop this just a second and I will show you what these snowmobiles look like from the factory. And they have these fantastic bug eye look. So here you can see.
That's such a classic style for that era.
Yeah, they came out in 1972. From what I was reading, this company was out of business by 81, so they did not last long.
I mean, that it almost reminds me of did you ever see the old Mercury snowmobiles, like the Merc 644s?
I don't know if I have.
That had kind of like whereas a lot of the other snowmobiles, they had sort of a slab front with just the single headlight in the middle. The Mercuries were a little more stretched out. They had dual headlights on either side. And I always thought that was such a great looking snowmobile.
Yeah. And it's just cool. So,
and they fit, and you got to take the windshield off, but they fit up underneath the trailer of this motorhome. And I mean, I think it looks fantastic inside. It's absolutely dated. It is absolutely 70s in every possible way. And I don't necessarily like that style.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And if I had that, I wouldn't change a single thing.
And so
change a single thing.
Just to promote who's selling it real quick. This is on Worldwide Auctioneers. It is currently for sale. It is offered without reserve. We don't know what price it is going for right now, but you can bid on it and you can look on motor1.com to find it. It's just 70s chic, I guess I would call it. It's not cool, but it is chic. So, Smith, your turn. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to jump to something, but as I said, we're kind of winging it. And it didn't occur to me when I was thinking about this article this creation that I wanted to share. I don't have any photos. This was a video from YouTube. Let me go ahead and share this up. I can do this here a little bit. We can figure something out, because every time in the past when we've tried to show videos, we get YouTube strikes.
We've had issues.
So we don't play videos, but this kind of gives you an idea. It's called the Sled Zeppelin, the ultimate toy hauler. What impressed me the most from this build, and I mean, you can see it here in the photos. It looks like just a big square RV, right?
Right. Yeah, it totally looks like that. Yeah.
That was a Bluebird bus. Like a
school bus.
Like this cab over Bluebird school bus.
Huh.
And I wish I had photos of the build, because the only thing okay. If I don't play the video, if I don't play the video, maybe we can do
it. Safe. Yeah.
I mean that's how it started. It was a yellow Bluebird school bus, and they took it and they kept the cab and they cut cut the rest of the bus off. Like the whole thing. I mean, we're looking at it right now. You've got the cab in front of the front wheels that's left. Everything else from the floor up is gone. They cut it out completely. And they built this entire thing from scratch.
Good for them.
I mean, welded up the sides, welded up the top. And I mean, they kind of just did their own research and development through the process. And they created this thing called the Sled Zeppelin, because I mean, they're snowmobilers. They enjoy snowmobiling. And the Sled Zeppelin, let me see if I can bump this up forward here. The front half, I mean, they even put in, sides that extend out, you know, sliders like you have in the big motorhomes. And then the front half is, you know, typical big motorhome inside, but then the back half here is a garage for the snowmobiles.
Cool. Cool.
And it's not just a, like, you know, like a little space. Let me see if I can jump to the end of the video to show some things. I mean, it looks awesome inside. They built this whole thing.
Man, I mean, I want to be financially wealthy or financially independent enough that I can have an RV that I just roll around and snowmobile in, just follow the snow. You know, like the guys from Endless Snummer who followed the waves. I want to be the follow the snowman.
I mean, well, and we got to give them a shout out for their ability to fabricate their fabrication technique.
Oh, totally. That's impressive.
I mean, to build this thing from a Bluebird bus and basically rebuild it into something like this is just amazing. When you get back to the garage, okay, now I think now we're looking at the garage here. I mean, there's storage back here for, I think, like two or three snowmobiles. They have their helmets up here on the walls. There's fold out workbenches here where they can, if they need to do work, they can work on the sleds. There's fuel storage.
So
they
have my dad is watching this and I know he is jealous as hell right
now. I know, right? I mean, this rig is just amazing. What we're looking at, this still here right now, that's a fuel pump
mm-hmm.
for gassing up the sleds. Then they've got another little workbench up here, the tools, the whole shot. I think when I wrote this, when did I write this? I wrote this earlier this year. That was February of 2021. I showed it to my wife, Michelle. And, you know, I was like, what do you think? Can we do this? And she was like, no.
Fair.
It's like, no.
She's like, not wrong.
I mean, she's not a snowmobiler. But she's all about a camper and going out camping. But, you know, going full on crazy like this. I mean, you just drop down the entire back, run the sleds right up into the back. Yeah. The Sled Zeppelin. I love this thing. This is one of the best home built RVs I've ever seen. And it still blows my mind.
That is stupid.
To this day. To talk about it. Do you got anything else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, let's hit one last one and then okay. We'll kind of call it quits for tonight.
You got one and then, hey, I've got one more too if we got time.
Okay, cool. So this is one that you actually wrote about, but that I was very much interested in. This yes. is the Knaus concept. This is from Germany. And it uses a rotary engine range extender on it. So it is an electric RV, but with a rotary engine range extender. I'm going to be sharing some images.
What really disappointed me about this, because I wrote it up and this is fairly recent. I think they actually just revealed this at the Caravan Salon, which was just a week or so ago.
About 10 days ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a regular, I can't remember the class of motorhome that it is.
It's a Fiat Ducato. It's basically a Mercedes Sprinter, Ford Transit, that kind of size.
Yeah. Range. Well, a little bit bigger, I think. And it's just a regular, I mean, it's a nice camper, but I mean, it's a regular professionally built camper van.
Yeah.
But they have the rotary engine as a range extender.
Which is wild because, as we've talked about recently, Mazda can't even do that.
Yeah,
Mazda has somehow failed at making a rotary engine extender. I'm sorry, it's not us. So Inside EVs, if you go to their last podcast, mm-hmm. they were discussing this, that, you know, the new MX-30 has this abhorrent range of like 100 miles, and they promised that it would have a rotary engine extender, and it doesn't. And it's just bad all around. But somehow this company from Germany has managed to do it. It's a concept, granted, it's a one-off, but
now
they did one of them.
It's just a one-off concept.
Yeah.
And this is a totally electric motorhome.
Yeah.
When you run out of juice, that rotary engine just feeds your battery, or it can feed power to the electric motor directly. I can't recall what the total range was.
It wasn't
very impressive, if memory serves me.
So on electric only, it is 60 miles.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
It's not great. You're not really going for a weekend adventure with
that's electric only. We do not know what it what the range extender adds to that. So,
but they did say that when you're at your campsite, that rotary engine will basically give you power, you know, normal power usage that you would normally use for 5 days. So, I mean, I don't think you could convert that to a total distance you could drive.
Right.
But I mean, it's an interesting idea. They went with the rotary because, as rotary people will tell you over and over and over and over, the compact engine,
just tiny,
it's tiny and it's smooth and it's a nice, I mean, for a camping application, instead of having the clanging back and forth of regular pistons, a smoother rotary. Yeah, that could make sense.
Okay. Finish this out, dude.
Finish this out. Okay. This is actually one that I wrote a long time ago. We're going back all the way back to April of 2019 for this.
Whoa.
And this was another video, but we do have some photos to go along with it.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if I had to try to put this back up on Motor One's Facebook page to see if it gets more attention, because Motor One at this point, we were doing all right, but we were still growing. We weren't nearly as big then as we are now. And I think this crazy Bendy Bus RV conversion.
Oh, I remember this. Okay.
Deserves more love, because this thing is amazing. I think it's amazing. This guy, I mean, this is a big Bendy Bus. If you don't know what a Bendy Bus is, imagine a regular city bus with like an accordion section in the middle with like half of another city bus on the other side. It's huge. And if you've ever watched Top Gear, they love to ridicule the Bendy Bus, right?
Which is stupid, because they're perfect for the city. That's really awkward to ride in the Bendy section as someone who has done so, because it's constantly adjusting. So it's an awkward, that couple feet to ride in is a weird space, but it's perfect for low speed city driving.
Right. And I mean, oftentimes I can't remember exactly how much this person paid to get this bus. I'm fairly confident it was really low, because
it was secondhand. It was probably,
cities are moving these things out. They're just letting them go for a dime a dozen. But I mean, look at it inside. We're looking at a shot right now of the front. If I remember, this is in Australia because it's right-hand drive, and the front, we're looking at basically the dining room, and like legit dining room with space, with a large table with four big stools. At the very front of the bus, we can see the driver's seat and the steering wheel on the right side. Mm-hmm. But then on the left side, we have a kitchen cabinet that has like a microwave on it. On the right side, we have a full size kitchen sink with another big area. And I mean, and this is just, you know, one tiny area. Now, I mean, this also has a decent sized bathroom. That looks like,
I mean, that's a full size toilet.
That's a full size toilet.
That's not a cassette toilet like we cover in RVs a lot. That's just, that's a
full size toilet. You move on back to the bedroom, and it's like a legit bedroom. Honestly, my wife's dorm room wasn't that big in college. I mean, it's a legit bedroom with a door that closes, got the mini blinds around the windows. I think that's a full size bed. On the other side of that. Okay. Now we're looking at the living room. This is just off the dining room.
It's a fine sitting area. Maybe it's a little short-ish, but it's fine.
Fine sitting area. But I mean, you could have a dance party in here.
Oh yeah. You totally could.
It's large enough to have a dance party. Mm-hmm. There's a look at the very front, where, I mean, the kitchen cabinet goes all the way up to the very front of the bus. I think that's a wine rack that's mounted next to the instrument panel, which would be a little awkward if you get pulled over with a bunch of wine bottles there. But hey, that's I remember. He actually even had his own little separate office, and that's what we're looking at right now. This is an office that's just off of the bedroom, that it's not totally enclosed. But I mean, it's boxed
better
in
than a lot of people have.
It's boxed in like a cubicle. And yeah, when I was doing marketing with Ford back in the day, that's a little bit bigger than the cubicle I had in an actual building. Mm-hmm. And this is in a bus that you can drive around. There's a better look at sort of the living room, if you will. There's the middle entryway Because of course there's also the entry way up by the driver. And yeah, I mean, this again, this guy built all of this himself. And I mean, it's That's not
very nice.
Yeah. It's not the most maneuverable vehicle, right?
No, it's not going to be. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I mean, we're looking up at the kitchen again. There's the refrigerator, dishwasher. I mean, it's. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it wouldn't be terrible to drive around. I mean, with the flexible section in there.
Right.
I mean,
I'm thinking about it in the United States. If you stayed kind of interstates, some interstates, highways, you would be fine. Yep. This is not a back road vehicle by larger any stretch, campgrounds, but right. You know, yeah, it would be fine.
And I mean, I've in the years now that I've been riding with Motor One, I've never seen another self-built creation camper van, camper bus like this one.
No.
And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's been over 2 years now since I rode it. It's still in the back of my mind. I still try to plug it in as a related link when I can, just because who would think to take a bendy bus and do that, right?
Yeah. No, it's very cool.
What about your home-built camper vans, people? My Mazda, the Mazda 6, it's the 5-door hatchback, mm-hmm. but with the seats folded down, there's actually a fair amount of space in there. And
you've mentioned that
I've done like a mini, like afternoon sort of conversion where, okay, couple little pads in there to just stretch out and relax. I've got a fold up stove that fits in there.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. And it's not too bad. I couldn't live in it like the guy that we wrote about. Didn't you write about that guy? He lived in his Nissan Versa. He did like a Versa.
That wasn't me. No.
That wasn't you?
That okay. must have been Anthony.
It was Anthony that wrote that. And it was because I remember we were talking about it. It's like, okay, is this guy clever because he's living in his Nissan Versa? Or does he just have to live in his Nissan Versa?
Well, no. Didn't we recently cover someone that was living out of a Porsche Cayenne? I swear I remember
yes.
that.
Yes. Like, yep. I wrote that.
So ago.
Yeah. Was it that long ago? It wasn't that long ago. But yeah, it was an Overlander that he lifted up a little bit. And yeah, he did a conversion on it. And he was living out of it full time. Just him. I mean, if you're just going solo, I could see, you know, being in something like that for a little bit. But I have so much stuff and I really,
it was almost a month ago. It was August 6th.
And, you know, I think I could do like a Sprinter or something like that for maybe a year. But like a Cayenne, that might be a little bit much. Versa, the Nissan Versa, it was interesting. He had some good ideas there, but. Sorry, couldn't do it. But what I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen, what are some of your camper creations? Have you even thought about it? Have you thought about ditching everything, buying a van and just hitting the road? Podcast at motor1.com. Comment on the article that comes out every Friday. You can comment on the Facebook post that we put up on Fridays, and then we do another one on Sundays. You can comment on our YouTube channel, Motor One Podcast. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at CH Writing, and I've been tweeting a lot more recently, folks.
Your standards, you've been tweeting like three times a week.
Hey, for the last couple weeks, I'm almost getting like a tweet a day.
Oh, really? I'm not checking Twitter enough.
It feels that way.
Okay.
It feels you've been tweeting more.
Your mom likes
all my tweets. So you should feel really bad if you're not even following me.
I do follow you.
Well, everybody else at CH Writing and follow Bruce. You're at Chris Bruce 1985.
Yeah, super easy.
That's another way to talk with us. I think it's time for us to go enjoy some Labor Day festivities. So why don't you take us out, man?
Yeah. So just super quick, if you are a new listener and you've got this far into the show, please subscribe to us. Like it's not an ego thing. It just helps with. It's an ego thing
with me a little bit. I'd be honest. Okay.
I'm Smith. A little narcissistic. Stroke Smith's ego. Just stroke it. But yeah. So if you are a new listener and you just found us subscribe to us. If you are an old listener and you haven't subscribed to us yet, just do it. It's literally a click. Like, it is no money. It is no time. It is literally a click. So please do if you haven't done that. But anyway, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We always appreciate every listener, every comment, every just anyone who wants to experience our show. We love that. And we really, you know, we want that. We appreciate that. We would end up talking about cars anyway, but we like that we're also entertaining you about it. So thank you very much. And yeah, that's going to be our show for tonight. And all right. Bye-bye.
We'll see everybody. Bye-bye.